he reined in.
Master Huttrell ignored the discourtesy and gave Velin a rigidly neutral glance.
"Wasn't there," he said, climbing down from the cart. "Need to see the aspect. Stay here." With that, he stomped off towards the aspect's chambers. Velin managed to wait a full 10 seconds before hastening after him.
Master Huttrell was in the aspect's rooms for several long minutes before he emerged, walking past Velin without a glance, ignoring his questions. The aspect's door remained firmly closed, and Velin found himself stepping forward to knock.
"No!"
Norta's hand was on his wrist.
"Are you mad? I need to know."
"You have to wait."
"Wait for what? Silence? No sign that he'd ever been here? Like Mikkel or Jenis? Light a fire, say some words, and it's another one of us gone. Forgotten."
"The test of the wild is hard, brother."
"Not for him. For him it was nothing."
"You don't know that. You don't know what could have happened beyond the walls."
"I know hunger and cold would never have laid him low. He was too strong."
"For all his strength, he was but a boy. As we were when they sent us out into the cold and the dark to fend for ourselves." Velin tore his wrist away, smoothing his hand through his hair in frustration. "I don't think he was ever a boy." The sound of boots on stone snapped their attention to the corridor, seeing Master Solis striding towards them.
"What are you two doing here?"
he demanded, halting before the aspect's door.
"Waiting for news of our brother, Master," Velin replied evenly.
Solis showed a brief spasm of anger before he reached for the door handle.
"Then wait."
With that, he went inside. It was only 5 minutes or so, but it seemed like an hour. Abruptly, the door opened, and Master Solis jerked his head, indicating leave to enter. They found the aspect behind his desk, his long face as inexpressive as ever, but there was a calculation in the gaze he leveled at Velin, as if what was about to transpire had more import than he could know.
"Brother Velin," he said, "do you know if Brother Frentis has any enemies outside these walls?"
"Enemies?" Velin felt his heart plummet. "He found him. I couldn't protect him."
"There is a man, Aspect," he replied, his tone heavy with sorrow. "The leader of Varenshold's criminal fraternity. Before Brother Frentis joined us, he put a knife in his eye. I have heard that he still bears a grudge."
Master Solis gave a snort of exasperation, and Norta for once appeared lost for words.
"And it didn't occur to you," the Aspect said, "to share this information with myself or Master Solis?"
Velin could only shake his head in numb silence.
"You arrogant idiot,"
Master Solis said very precisely.
"Yes, Master."
"What's done is done," the Aspect said. "Do you have any notion of where this man with one eye might take our brother?"
Velin's head snapped up.
"He's alive?"
"Master Huttrell found a body, but it wasn't Brother Frentis, although the unfortunate fellow had one of our order's hunting knives buried in his chest. There were signs of a fierce struggle, several blood trails, but no Brother Frentis."
Somehow they knew he was here.
So stupid to think One-Eye's servants wouldn't find him. They must have followed the cart, took him alive.
The words of Gallus the Climber came back to him. One-Eye says he's going to take a year to skin him alive when he finds him.
"I will recover him," he told the Aspect, his voice cold with certainty. "I will kill those who took him and bring him back to the Order, living or dead."
The Aspect's eyes flicked to Master Solis.
"What do you need?"
Solis asked.
"Half a day outside the walls, my brothers, and my dog."
Scratch seemed to know what was expected of him, sniffing the sock they had found on the Frentis's bunk, and immediately sprinting off with a brief yelp. Velin had led him to the road leading to Varenshold's north gate before producing the sock. The slave hound's evident joy at finding himself beyond the confines of the order house, muted by their grim mood. They ran after him, laboring to keep him in sight, the slave hound setting a killing pace as he traced the winding route, away from the road and towards the banks of the brine wash. Velin found him pawing uncertainly at a patch of mud near some shallows, a plaintive whine coming from his throat as he pointed his nose at something lying in the river. Velin's heart plummeted at the sight of the body, face down and covered with the blue cloak. He jumped into the shallows and waded towards it, his brother soon joining him to pull the body onto his back. "Who's this booger?" Dentos asked. The dead man was short, only a little taller than Frentis, with a pockmarked face and a recent cut on his cheek.
"He's drained," Norto observed, noting the man's pallor and ripping open his shirt to reveal a stab wound to the lower belly. "Our little brother's work, perhaps."
Valen pulled the cloak from the corpse, and they searched it for any clue as to Frentis's whereabouts, finding nothing save some sodden pipe leaf.
"I make it 5 horses, Canis said, crouching to examine the tracks in the mud at the water's edge.
He fell from his mount when they forded, so they took anything of value and left him to bleed.
"And I thought outlaws were such admirable folk," Norto commented.
"Brother," Barkus said, nudging Valen and pointing to where Scratch was busily sniffing the grass on the bank. After a moment the slave hound raised his head and bounded off, following the line of the river as they ran in pursuit. He paused again a few 100 paces short of the city walls, circling around some deep, parallel tracks ploughed into the earth.
"Cartwheels," Canis said.
"They hit him in a cart to get him through the gate." Scratch was already off again, making for the north gate. The city guards waved them through with puzzled expressions but no words. The order was never to be questioned. It was no surprise to Valen when Scratch soon led them to the southern quarter. The streets were mostly deserted, save for the usual assortment of drunks and whores, most of whom found somewhere else to be when they saw 5 brothers from the 6th Order running behind a very large dog. Eventually Scratch stopped, standing tensed and still, as he did when he was pointing out a trail when they hunted together. His nose pointed directly at a tavern, nestled in a shadowed alleyway. The sign hanging over the door marked it as the Black Boar. Lamplight glowed dimly through the windows, and they could hear the raucous babble of liquor-induced merriment. Scratch began to growl, a soft but chilling rumble. Valen knelt, patting him gently on the head.
"Stay," he commanded.
The hound gave a plaintive whine as they moved towards the inn, but did as he was told.
"What's the plan?" Dentos asked as they paused at the doorway.
"I thought I'd ask them where Frentis is," Valen replied. "After that, I expect we'll find out if we're as well taught as we think we are." The vocal good humor of the inn's patrons died instantly at the sight of them. A room of mostly unwashed and prematurely aged faces stared at them, with a mixture of fear and palpable hatred. The man behind the bar was large, bald, and clearly less than happy to see them.
"Good evening, sir," Norta greeted him, striding towards the bar. "A fine establishment you have here."
"Order ain't welcome here," the barman said.
Valen noted the thin sheen of sweat on his top lip.
"Ain't right you coming in here. It's not your place."
"Oh, don't fret, my fine fellow," Norta clapped the man on the shoulder.
"We want no trouble. All we want is our brother, the one who stuck a knife in your master's eye a few years ago. Be a good fellow and tell us where he is, and we won't kill you or any of your customers."
A rumble of anger ran through the crowd, and the barman licked his lips, his bald head now shining with sweat. For the briefest second, his eyes flicked to his right before snapping back to Norta.
"No brothers here," he said.
Norta gave one of his best smiles.
"Oh, I beg to differ. Tell me, did you know a man can live for several hours in agonizing pain, of course, after his stomach has been slit open?"
Valen followed the line of the barman's brief glance, seeing little but the shuffling feet of nervous patrons and a dusty floor, except for a clean patch near the fireplace, a patch about a yard square. As he moved forward to take a closer look, a man rose from a table, a muscular man with the broad knuckles and indented nose common to prize fighters.
"Where do you think you go?"
Valen punched him in the throat without breaking stride, leaving him choking on the dusty floorboards. There was a cacophony of scraping chairs as other patrons rose, a murmur of anger building in the crowd. Valen crouched to inspect the patch of dust-free floorboards, which quickly revealed itself as a trapdoor. Well made, he judged, his fingers tracing the joins.
"Got no right here," the barman was shouting as he straightened. "Coming in here, hitting customers, making threats ain't right."
There was a loud growl of assent from the inn's patrons, most now on their feet, many holding a variety of knives and cudgels.
"Order, bastards,"
one of them spat,
brandishing a broad-bladed knife.
"Venture where you shouldn't. Need cutting down to size."
Norta's sword came free of its scabbard in a blur, the man with the knife staring at his severed fingers as the blade clattered to the floor.
"No need for that kind of language, sir,"
Norta cautioned him sternly. The rest of the crowd drew back a little, and silence stretched, broken only by the knife man's keening over his mutilated hand and the rasping chokes of the prizefighter Valian had punched. "They're afraid," Valian decided, scanning the faces in the crowd, "but not scared enough to run. Numbers give them strength." He put his fingers to his mouth and whistled. Once, sharp and loud. He had expected Scratch to use the door, but the slave hound apparently saw little obstacle in the window. Shattered glass exploded across the inn, the dark bulk of snarling muscle landing in the center of the room, snapping viciously at any patrons unfortunate enough to be close by. The inn emptied in a few seconds, save for the two injured patrons and the barman, clutching a hefty cudgel, his chest heaving with fear.
"Why are you still here?" Dentos asked him. "If I run without fighting, he'll kill me," the bald man replied.
"One eye'll be dead by morning," Valian assured him.
"Get out of here."
The barman gave him a last nervous glance before dropping his cudgel and running for the back door.
"Barkus," Valian said, "help me with this."
They jammed their hunting knives into the join between the floor and the trapdoor, and levered it open. The hole it revealed went straight down into a dimly lit cellar. Valian could see firelight flickering on the stone floor about 10 feet below. He stepped back, drawing his sword and preparing to jump. Scratch, however, had picked up a fresh trail, and saw little reason to linger. He flashed past Valian and disappeared into the hole. After a second or two, the mingled sound of shock, pain, and Scratch's roaring growls left them in no doubt he had found some enemies.
"Think he'll save any for us?" Barkus asked, wincing.
Valian jumped into the hole, landing and rolling on the stone floor, coming to his feet with his sword leveled. His brothers followed him in quick succession. The cellar was large, at least 20 feet across, with torches set into the walls and a tunnel leading off to the right. There were two bodies in the cellar, both large men with their throats torn out. Scratch was sitting atop one of them, licking a bloodied snout. Seeing Valian, he yelped briefly and disappeared into the tunnel. "He's still got the scent." Valian lifted a torch from the wall and chased after the slave hound. The tunnel seemed to go on forever, though in truth it could only have taken a few minutes of racing after Scratch before they emerged into a large vaulted chamber. It was clearly an old structure, finely pointed brickwork arching up on all sides to meet in an elegant ceiling high above. A terrace of tiled steps led down to a flat, circular area, in which was placed a large oak wood dining table, decorated with a mismatched variety of gold and silverware. There were 6 men seated at the table, playing cards in their hands, and a scattering of coins between them. They stared at Valian and Scratch in stark amazement.
"Who in the name of faith are you?"
one of them demanded, a tall man with a cadaverous face. Valian noted the loaded crossbow resting on the chair next to him. The other 5 men all had swords or axes within easy reach.
"Where's my brother?" Valian demanded.
The man who had spoken flicked his eyes from Valian to Scratch, taking note of the blood on his jaws, then blanching visibly as Barkus and the others emerged from the tunnel behind Valian.
"You're in the wrong place, brother," the tall man said,
Valian admiring the effort he put into keeping the tremble from his voice.
"One eye doesn't take kindly to—"
His hand flashed towards the crossbow. Scratch was a blur of muscle and teeth, leaping the table and fastening his jaws on the tall man's throat, the crossbow sending its bolt towards the ceiling. The other 5 men were on their feet, clutching their weapons, showing fear but no sign of fleeing. Valian saw little point in any further talk. The burly man he charged attempted to feint to the left and bring his axe up under Valian's guard, but was far too slow, the sword point taking him in the neck before he could begin his swing. Impaled on the blade, he goggled, eyes bulging, blood seeping from his mouth. Valian withdrew his blade, letting him collapse to the floor, twitching. He turned, finding that his brothers had already dispatched the other 4. Barkus, grim-faced, was wiping his sword blade on the jerkin of the man he had killed, a pool of thick blood spreading over the tiles. Dentos knelt,
to pluck a throwing knife from the sternum of his enemy. Velin thought he may have been blinking away tears. Norta was staring down at the man he had killed, blood dripping from his lowered sword, his face a frozen mask. Only Canis appeared unaffected, flicking the blood from his sword and kicking the corpse at his feet to make sure he was dead. Velin knew that Canis had killed before, but still found his brother's coolness disconcerting. "Am I not the only true killer among us after all?" he wondered. Scratch gave the tall man's neck a final twist, snapping the spine with a loud crack. Releasing the corpse, he trotted around the chamber, his nose twitching as he searched for Frentice's scent. "This is an interesting structure," Canis observed, moving to one of the columns that stretched up to the vaulted ceiling and smoothing his palm over the brickwork. "Fine. Very fine. You don't see craftsmanship like that in the city these days. This is a very old place." "Thought it was part of the sewers," Dentos said. His back was turned to the man he had killed, and he stood with his arms tightly crossed, shivering as if chilled. "Oh, no," Canis responded. "This is something else, I'm sure. See the motif here?" He pointed out a strange stone carving set into the brickwork. "A book and a quill. An ancient emblem of the faith, signifying the Third Order. A sigil long out of use. This place dates from the earliest years of the city, when the faith was still newborn." Velin's attention was mostly fixed on Scratch, but he found himself drawn by Canis's words. Looking around the chamber, he noted there were seven columns rising to the ceiling, each with a carved emblem set into the base. "Once there were seven," he murmured. "Of course," Canis enthused, moving around the chamber to inspect each of the columns. "Seven columns. This is proof, brother. Once there were seven." "What are you wittering about?" Norta demanded, some color returning to his cheeks. In contrast to Dentos, he appeared unable to look away from the body of his slain enemy, his sword still bloody. "Seven columns," Canis replied. "Seven orders. This is an ancient temple of the faith." He stopped beside a column to peer at the emblem it bore. "A snake and a goblet. I'd wager this is the emblem of the Seventh Order."
"Seventh Order?"
Norta finally looked up from the corpse.
"There is no Seventh Order."
"Not now, no," Canis explained. "But once."
"A tale for another day, brother," Velin told him. He turned to Norta. "Your blade'll rust if you don't clean it."
Barkus was examining the riches piled on the table, running his hands over the gold and silver.
"Good stuff here," he said in admiration. "Would have brought a sack down if I'd known."
"Wonder where they got it all," Dentos said, hefting an ornately engraved silver plate.
"They stole it," Velin said. "Take what you want, but don't let it weigh you down."
Scratch gave a short yelp, his nose pointed at a solid section of wall to Valen's left. Barkus moved to examine the wall, thumping his fist against the bricks a few times.
"Just a wall."
Scratch scampered over and sniffed at the base of the wall, his paws chipping away at the mortar. "A hidden doorway, perhaps." Canis came over to run his hands over the wall's edges. "Could be a catch or a lever somewhere." Velin pulled the axe from the limp hand of the man he'd killed, and walked over to smash it into the wall. He kept hacking until a hole appeared in the brickwork. Scratch yelped again, but Velin didn't need the hound's senses to tell him what lay on the other side. He could smell it plain enough himself. Sweet, sickening, corrupt. He exchanged glances with Canis, finding sympathy in his friend's eyes.
"Frentice, want to be a brother? Want to be like you?"
He redoubled his efforts with the axe, bricks and mortar exploding in a cloud of red and grey dust. His brothers joined in with what tools they could find. Barkus using a hatchet taken from an enemy, Dentos a broken chair leg. Soon, enough of the wall was gone to allow them to enter. The chamber beyond was long and narrow. Torches set into the walls provided light enough to illuminate a scene from a nightmare.
"Faith!"
Barkus exclaimed in shock. The corpse hung from the roof, its ankles chained and arms secured with a leather strap across the chest. It had clearly been hanging for several days, graying flesh loosened and sagging from the bones. The gaping wound in the neck showed how the man had died. Placed beneath him was a bowl, black with dried blood. There were five more bodies hanging in the chamber, each with their throats cut and a bowl placed beneath. They swayed slightly in the draught from the demolished wall. The stench was overpowering. Scratch wrinkled his nose at the corruption, staining the air, and kept close to the wall, as far from the bodies as possible. Dentos found a corner to throw up in. Valen fought the desire to follow suit, and moved from body to body, forcing himself to check each face, finding only strangers.
"What is this?" Barker said in sick wonderment. "You said this man was just an outlaw."
"He appears to be an outlaw of considerable ambition," Norta observed. "This isn't about thievery," Canis said softly, taking a closer look at one of the hanging corpses. "This is something else." He looked down at the blood-black bowl on the floor. "Something else entirely." "What would—" Norta began, but Valen held up a hand to silence him.
"Listen," he hissed.
It was faint, an odd sound, a man's voice chanting. The words were indistinct, alien. Valen followed the sound to an alcove, where he found a door slightly ajar. Sword held low, he eased the door open with the toe of his boot. Beyond was another chamber, this one roughly hewn from rock, bathed in the red glare of firelight, deep shadows flickering over a sight that made him stifle a shout of shock. Frentis had been tied to a wooden frame in front of a roaring open fire. A gag was firmly secured in his mouth. He was naked, his torso marked by many cuts, forming a strange pattern on the skin, blood flowing freely down his body. His eyes were wide open, alive with agony. At the sight of Valen, they widened further. Next to Frentis was a man with a knife, bare-chested, his strength evident in the knotted muscle of his arms and the hard, angular lines of his face, a face with only one eye. The empty socket had been filled with a smooth black stone, reflecting a single red point of firelight, as he turned to Valen.
"Ah," he said, "and you must be the mentor."
Valen had never truly wanted to kill before, never felt a real bloodlust. But now it raged in him, a song of fury blinding his reason. His fist tightened on his sword hilt as he stepped forward into a charge. He never knew what happened, never truly understood the paralysis that seized his limbs, only that he found himself sprawled on the floor, his lungs suddenly empty of air, his sword clattering from his grasp. His hands and feet felt like ice. He tried to stand, but could find no purchase on the floor, flailing like a senseless drunk as the one-eyed man moved away from Frentis, his knife a blood-stained yellow tooth in the fire's glow.
"Ho there!" Barker shouted, charging along with the others. "Time to die, One-Eye!"
The one-eyed man raised his hand, an almost careless gesture, and a curtain of fire rose in front of Valen's brothers, sending them reeling back. The firewall spanned the chamber, rising from floor to ceiling, an unbroken barrier of swirling flame.
"I like fire," the one-eyed man said, turning his angular face back to Valen. "The way it dances. Quite beautiful, don't you think?"
Valen tried to reach inside his cloak for his hunting knife, but found all his hand would do was shake uncontrollably.
"You're strong," the one-eyed man observed. "Usually they can't move at all."
He glanced over at Frentis, wide-eyed, blood streaming from his cuts, his naked form straining against his bonds with all his strength.
"You came here for him," the one-eyed man continued. "You're the one he said would come to kill me. Alsorna, Black Hawk fighter, assassin killer, battle lord spawn. I've heard of you. Have you heard of me?"
He gave a mirthless smile. Valen found to his surprise he could still spit. It landed on the one-eyed man's boots. The smile disappeared.
"I see you have. What did you hear, I wonder? That I was an outlaw? An overlord of outlaws? True, of course, but only in part. No doubt you had to kill several of my employees to get this far. Didn't you wonder why they wouldn't run? Why they were more afraid of me than you?"
The one-eyed man crouched, his face close to Valin's, hissing.
You come here with your sword and your brothers and your dog, and you have no idea of your utter insignificance.
He turned his face, displaying the black stone in his eye socket.
You would be forgiven for thinking this a curse, but it was a gift, a wondrous gift, for which I should thank your young brother. Oh, the power he gave me, power enough to set myself up over all the scum of this city. I have made myself a king of thieves and cutthroats. I have eaten off silver plates and slacked my lust on the finest whores. I have everything a man could want. But yet I find there is one thing I can't forget. One thing that troubles my sleep.
He rose and moved towards Frentis.
The pain of a gutter-born whelp putting a knife through my eye.
Frentis writhed in his bonds, his gagged face distorted with rage and hate. Valin could hear the muffled obscenities he attempted to spit through the gag.
He wouldn't talk, you know, the one-eyed man told Valin over his shoulder. You should be proud of him. Refuse to share your order's secrets. Although now you're here in person, I dare say my questions will be answered in full.
He placed the knife against Frentis's chest, pushing the point half an inch into the flesh, and tracing a cut from the breast to the ribcage. Frentis's teeth were white on his gag as he screamed. Valin tried to gather his arms under him, maneuvering the ice-numb limbs beneath his chest, then trying to heave himself upright.
Oh, don't bother, the one-eyed man said, turning back from Frentis, bloody knife in hand. You're tightly bound, I assure you.
Teeth gritted, Valin managed to push himself off the stone floor, his entire body shaking with the effort.
Strong indeed, the one-eyed man said. But I can't have that.
The same icy numbness seized him again, flooding his arms and legs, spreading into his chest and groin, forcing him back to the floor exhausted.
You feel my power? The one-eyed man stood over him. At first it frightened me. Even one such as I can feel the chill of looking into an abyss. But fear fades.
He held up the knife, stained with Frentis's blood.
I have the secret now, the knowledge to make myself immune to all enemies.
He placed a finger on the knife blade, drawing a bead of blood from the metal and placing it in his mouth.
Who could have thought that it would all be so simple? To be a king amongst outlaws requires the spilling of much blood. These past years I have bathed in it, as I sought victims to sate my anger against your young brother here. And as I bathed, I found my power growing so that now, even one as strong as you cannot stand against my will. I was told your destiny lay elsewhere.
Canis leapt through the wall of fire, his sword held high in a two-fisted grip. He brought it down as his feet touched the floor, the blade cleaving the one-eyed man from shoulder to sternum. The look on his face, as he stood impaled on the sword, was one of complete astonishment. Fire without heat, Canis said, isn't fire at all. Valin's paralysis faded as the one-eyed man's corpse slipped to the floor. The firewall he had raised vanished in an instant. Valin felt hands lifting him, his limbs still shaking with lingering numbness. Barkus and Norta cut Frentis's bonds and took the gag from his mouth. Free of his ties, the boy went wild, screaming hate-filled curses at the one-eyed man's inert form, taking up his knife and plunging it again and again into the body.
You stinking bastard! He screamed. You think you can cut me, you fucking filth!
Valin waved the others back, and let Frentis abuse the corpse until he collapsed from the effort, slumped over the body, bloody and exhausted. Brother, he said, placing his cloak over Frentis's shoulders. Your wounds need attention.
Chapter 8 Sister Sharon is still in the south, Brother Selin told Valin at the gate of the Fifth Order, his eyes flicking to Frentis, hanging bloody and unconscious between Barkus and Norta.
Master Harren has undertaken her duties. Come, brothers. He opened the gate wide, beckoning them to enter. I will take you to him. Master Harren spent over an hour stitching and dressing the cuts on Frentis's body, ordering them from the treatment room when their unasked for advice and constant questions became too irksome. Velen found Aspect Alera waiting in the corridor. I can see your day has been hard, brothers, she said. There is food waiting for you in our dining hall. They ate in silence, their conversation stilled by the presence of so many members of the Fifth Order. The healers stared at the blue-robed, grim-faced interlopers, a few familiar faces offering greetings to Velen, receiving only a curt nod in response. Their table was piled high with food, but Velen found he had no appetite. His hands retained a slight tremble from whatever the one-eyed man had done to him, and the vision of Frentis tied and bleeding was still at the forefront of his thoughts. Aspect Alera joined them an hour or so later. Master Harren tells me your brother will recover. He will have to stay with us for several days whilst he heals. Is he awake, Aspect? Velen asked her. Master Harren gave him a sleeping draught. He should wake in the morning. You can see him then. Many thanks, Aspect. May I request that word be sent to our order? Aspect Arlen will be expecting my report. She sent Brother Selin to the house of the Sixth Order, and gave them a room in the East Wing. Velen insisted on sitting with Frentis, and Canis waited with him whilst the others slept, cleaning his weapons to pass the time, laying his swords and knives out on the floor, metal gleaming in the candlelight as he ran cloth over each blade with meticulous care. Scratch had been confined to an empty pen in the stables. He ignored the food he had been given, and howled continually, his plaintive cries reaching them through the walls. Velen studied the long-bladed dagger he had taken from Frentis, the blade the one-eyed man had used to cut the web of scars into his body. It was Canis's by right, but he had refused to take it with a grimace of distaste. Velen decided to keep it on impulse. It was a finely made weapon of unfamiliar design, the blade well-tempered and the handle elegantly fashioned with a silver pommel. The guard bore writing with unfamiliar letters. Clearly it was a weapon from across the sea. One eye had a long reach, it seemed. The fire was an illusion, Velen said. His voice sounded listless and dull to his ears, reminding him of Brother Mackerel and his jaded tales of fire and slaughter. Canis glanced up from his weapons and nodded, his hands continuing to guide the cloth over the blades. The dark, Velen said. The blood, it gave him power. That's what the bodies were for. Canis didn't look up but nodded once more, still cleaning his blades. Velen felt the tremor return to his hands, his anger flaring at the memory of his helplessness before the one-eyed man. A helplessness not shared by Canis. Canis could leap through dark-born fire and hack down the man who called it forth. You know so much more than you tell me, brother, Velen realized. It's always been this way. There are no secrets between us, he said. Canis's hand paused in mid-stroke as he worked the cloth over his sword blade. His eyes met Valen's, and for the briefest second, there was something there, something different from the affection or respect he normally saw in his friend's eyes, something almost resentful. The door opened, and Master Solis entered with Aspect Alera. You two should be resting, he said shortly, moving to the bed to check on Frentis, his eyes tracing over the blood-stained bandages covering his chest and arms. Will he scar, Aspect? The cuts were deep. Master Harren is skilled, but... She spread her hands. There is only so much we can do. Luckily his muscles are intact. He will be strong again soon. The man who did this is dead? Solis asked Velen. Yes, Master. Velen gestured at Canis. My brother's stroke. Solis glanced at Canis. The man was skilled? His skills were not with weapons, Master. Canis glanced uncertainly at Aspect Alera. Talk freely, Solis instructed him. He told Master Solis all that had transpired since their departure from the Order House, from the Black Boar Inn to the confrontation with the one-eyed man beneath the city. The man had knowledge of the dark, Master. He could call up an illusion of fire, and he bound Brother Velen by his will alone. But not you? Solis asked with a raised eyebrow. No,
I expect I surprised him by seeing through his illusion.
You made sure of the kill?
He's dead, Master, Velen assured him. Master Solis and Aspect Alera shared a brief glance.
I hear that the Aspect had been gracious enough to provide you with a room, Solis said, turning back to Frentis. She would feel insulted if you failed to use it.
Recognizing their dismissal, they rose and moved to the door.
Tell no one else of this, Master Solis ordered before they left. And do something to shut that bloody dog up.
In the morning, Master Solis questioned them closely about the route to One-Eye's chambers, and the ancient temple to the faith they had found. Velen offered to guide him, but received only a stern refusal. When he was satisfied with their directions, Solis told them to return to the Order House.
Brother Frentis, Velen began, we'll heal just as well with you at your training where you belong. The test of the sword is but 8 weeks away, and none of you are ready yet.
They trudged back to the Order House without Master Solis, who had given them another warning to keep silent before he went off to investigate their findings. Scratch had whined in protest when they led him away from the House of the Fifth Order, needing much reassurance from Velen before following their steps. To Velen, their tower room seemed to have shrunk in their absence. A night of fear and mystery made it feel so small, a child's room, even though it had been a long time since he felt like a child. He stowed his gear and laid back on his narrow bed, closing his eyes to see again the one-eyed man's wall of flame and Frentis's tortured form. I believed I had learnt so much, he thought, but I know nothing. The boys from Frentis's group came asking questions, but Velen followed Master Solis's instructions and told them he had been attacked by a mountain lion during his test of the wild. He was recovering in the House of the Fifth Order, and would return within a few days. Solis himself said nothing about his investigations on return to the Order, and the Aspect did not request their presence. Frentis's abduction was another non-event in the Order's history. The Order fights, but often it fights in shadow. As he grew older, Velen found ever more truth in Master Solis's words. Frentis himself said nothing of the incident on his return, resuming his training with a disturbing vigor, as if rejecting the damage One-Eye had done to him by ignoring the pain his exertions cost him. His demeanor had changed also. He was less apt to smile. And where he had been talkative before, now he was largely silent. His temper, too, had grown shorter, and the Masters had to drag him out of several fights. Even the other boys in his group seemed wary of him. Only with Scratch and Velen did he regain some vestige of his old self, taking an energetic part in training the now-grown pups. However, even then he continued to say nothing of his ordeal, although Velen sometimes caught him running his fingers over the pattern of scars carved into his skin, his face oddly thoughtful, as if trying to decipher their meaning.
"Do they hurt?"
Velen asked him one Eltrian evening. The pups were tired from a day spent tracking with Master Huttrill, and could only snap lazily at the treats they tossed into their pens. Frentis quickly pulled his hand away from his shirt.
A little? Less and less as the weeks pass.
Aspect Alera gave me a balm for him.
Helps a bit.
It was my fault.
Forget it.
If I had told the Aspect, I said forget it. Frentis's face was tense as he stared into the pens. Slasher, his favorite pup, sensed his mood and came over to lick at his hand, whining in concern.
He's dead, Frentis said, calmer now. And I'm not, so forget it. Can't kill him twice.
They walked back to the keep together, cloaks wrapped against the chill, although winter was fading fast and the surrounding trees were quickly taking on the verdant hues of spring.
Test of the sword next month, Frentis said. Worried?
Why? Do you think I should be?
I've already bet my whole knife collection that you'll finish all three in less than 2 minutes. I meant what happens after. They'll send you away, right?
I expect so.
Think they'll let us serve together when I'm confirmed?
I like that.
So would I. But I don't think we get a choice.
It'll be a good while before we see one another again, that's for sure. They lingered at the courtyard, Velen sensing Frentis had more to say. He began, then stopped, fidgeting uncomfortably.
I'm glad you spoke for me when I came here, he said after a moment.
I'm glad I'm in the Order. I feel like I was meant to be here. So you shouldn't feel bad about anything that happens to me, right? Whatever happens from now on, you don't have to feel bad. And you don't have to come running when I'm in trouble. Wouldn't you come running if I was in trouble? That's different. No, it's exactly the same. He clapped Frentis on the shoulder. Get some rest, brother. He had taken a few steps when Frentis said something to make him stop. His voice barely above a whisper. The one who waits will destroy us. He turned to find Frentis hunched in his cloak, arms folded tightly against his chest, face weary. He wouldn't meet Valen's eye.
What?
Valen asked.
He told me.
Frentis winced as if pained, and Valen knew he was reliving his torture at One Eye's hands. He got angry when I wouldn't tell him what he wanted to know. Kept asking about the tests. The skills we're taught here. Seemed to think we get taught how to practice the dark. Stupid bastard. Wasn't going to tell him anything, though. So he cut me some more, and then he said, "The one who waits will destroy your precious order, boy." The one who waits. Did he tell you what it meant? I passed out when he started cutting me again. He'd only just managed to bring me round when you turned up. Did you tell the Aspect of this? Frentis shook his head. Don't know why. Just felt that I shouldn't tell no one except you. Valen felt a chill that had nothing to do with the deepening cold. For a moment he was back in the forest during the test of the run, listening to the men who had killed Mikkel as they debated the identity of the victim. The other one. You heard what the other one said. Gave me the shivers he did. Don't tell anyone else, Valen said. One Eye told you nothing. He watched Frentis shiver in his cloak and forced a smile. The man was a loon. His words mean nothing. But it's best we keep this between us. Telling our brothers would only cause foolish talk. He watched Frentis nod and walk away, still clutching himself beneath his cloak, his fingers no doubt playing over his scars. Will he dream tonight? Valen thought, and felt a pang of mingled guilt and regret. Why couldn't it have been me who killed One Eye? Chapter 9. The morning of the test of the sword brought a hard rain that turned the earth to mud and did little to lighten their spirits. The test was held in an arena in Varenshold's northern quarter, an ancient structure of finely shaped granite, worn with age and weathered by the elements. It was known only as the Circle, and Valen had never met anyone who could tell him when or why it had been built. Looking at it now, he realized there were similarities with the temple to the seven orders they had found beneath the city. The way the supporting columns curved up to the tiers above echoed the elegance of the underground structure. Here and there he glimpsed adornments in the stonework, carvings of faded intricacy that recalled the better-preserved motifs of the temple. He drew Canis's attention to them as Master Solis led them into the shade beneath the columns, but he received only a grunt in response. Today, even Canis was too preoccupied to indulge in curiosity. Valen could see the fear and uncertainty on his brother's faces, but found he was unable to mirror it. The emotions that made Dentos vomit his breakfast, and Norta white-faced and closed-lipped, were something he simply didn't feel. He was unafraid, and he didn't understand why. Today he would face three men in armed combat. He would kill them, or they would kill him. The prospect of death should have chilled him to the core. Perhaps it was the very simplicity of the situation that robbed him of his fear. There were no questions here. No mysteries. No secrets. He would live, or he would die. But despite his inability to fear the ordeal, something still nagged at him. A small, insistent voice at the very edge of his thoughts, whispering words he didn't want to hear. Perhaps you don't fear the test because you relish it. Unwillingly, he recalled the test of knowledge, the awful truth the aspects had forced from him. I can kill. I can kill without hesitating. I was meant to be a warrior. Images of the men he had killed came back to him in a rush. The archer in the forest, the faceless assassins in the House of the Fifth Order, the one-eyed man's hireling. It was true. He had felt no hesitation in killing any of them. But had he truly relished it? You'll wait in here. Master Solis led them into a chamber set back from the main entrance.
The walls were thick, but they could hear the baying of the crowd in the circle. The test of the sword was an ever-popular event in the city, but only those with sufficient coin could purchase a ticket, and typically it was the realm's wealthier citizens who came to watch the three-day spectacle, often wagering huge sums on the outcome of each contest. The profits from the day would be donated to the Fifth Order to care for the sick. Valen couldn't help but smile at the irony of it.
"What's so funny?" Norta demanded.
Valen shook his head and sat down on a stone bench to wait. There were 20 brothers in Valen's group today. The 50 other survivors of the 300 who had started their training together as boys of 10 or 11 had undergone their tests over the preceding 2 days. So far, 10 had been killed, and another 8 so badly maimed they could no longer serve the Order. Many others had serious cuts requiring weeks of healing. The parade of wounded and shocked brothers trooping through the gates over the past 2 days had added considerable weight to the burden of fear most of them now carried. Of all of them, only Valen and Barkus seemed unaffected.
"Sugarcane?"
he offered Valen, taking the place next to his.
"Thank you, brother."
The cane was fresh, and its sweetness tinged with a slight acidity, but still the sensation was a welcome distraction from the grim mood of the others.
"Wonder who'll be first," Barkus said after a moment. "Wonder how they choose." "We draw lots," Master Solis told them from the doorway. "Nissa, you're first, let's go."
Canis nodded slowly, face immobile, and got to his feet. When he spoke, his voice was barely audible. "Brothers," he began, then stopped. Choked.
"I..."
He stammered for a moment, before Valen reached out to grasp his forearm.
"We know, Canis. I'll see you shortly. We all will."
They stood, the 5 of them grasping hands. Dentos, Barkus, Nortar, Valen, and Canis. Valen remembered how they had been as boys. Barkus beefy and clumsy, Canis thin and fearful, Dentos loud and full of stories, Norta sullen and resentful. Now he saw only shadows of those boys in the lean, stern-faced young men before him. They were strong. They were killers. They were what the Order had made them. This is the end of something, he realized. Live or die, this is where things change. Forever.
"It's been a long road," Barkus said. "Never thought I'd get this far."
"Wouldn't have but for you lot."
"Wouldn't change any of it," Dentos said. "Every day I thank the Faith for my place in the Order."
Norta's face was tense. His brows furrowed as he fought to master his fear. Valen thought he wasn't going to speak, but after a moment he said,
"I hope you all make it through."
"We will,"
Valen clasped hands with all of them.
"We always do.
Fight well, brothers." "Nissa!"
Master Solis said from the door. He sounded impatient, and Valen was surprised he had allowed them this interlude.
"Let's go!"
Waiting to find out if your friends were dead, Valen discovered, was a singular form of agony that made the effects of Joffrel root feel like a taste of lemon tea. One by one, his brothers were called out by Master Solis. There would be a short wait before the crowd erupted in cheers, the volume of which rose and fell with the fortunes of the fight. After a while, he found he could gauge the course of a fight, if not the victor, by the crowd's reaction. Some were over quickly, a matter of seconds. Kennedy's fight in particular had been very short. Valen found he couldn't decide if this was good or bad. Other fights were longer, Barkus and Norta both enduring prolonged contests of several minutes. Dentos was the last to be called before Valen. He forced a smile, took a firm grip on his sword hilt, and followed Master Solis from the chamber without a backward glance. Judging from the noise of the crowd, his fight was eventful. Raucous cheers followed by hushed silence, then an explosion of applause, repeated several times over. When the final wave of noise washed through the chamber, Valen found he was unable to judge if Dentos had survived. "Luck to you, brother," he thought, alone in the chamber now. "Mayhap I'll join you soon." His hand ached from gripping his sword hilt, the knuckles white on the leather. "Is this fear now?" he wondered. "Or just stage fright?"
"Sauna,"
Master Solis was in the doorway, his level gaze meeting Valen's eye with an intensity he hadn't seen before.
It's time.
The tunnel leading to the arena seemed long, much longer than he could have imagined. Time played tricks as he walked the length of the tunnel, the journey perhaps taking a minute or an hour. All the time the crowd's clamor rose in volume, until he felt himself bathed in sound as he emerged onto the sandy floor of the arena. The crowd bayed down at him, from ascending tiers of seats on all sides, at least 10,000 in all. He was unable to distinguish a face amongst the multitude. They were simply a seething, gesticulating mass. None of them seemed to mind the rain, which was still falling in hard, wind-driven sheets. There was blood on the sand, raked to stop it pooling, and dulled by the rain, but still a stark red against the greenish-yellow of the arena floor. Three men waited for him there, each holding a sword of the Azraelian pattern.
Two murderers and a rapist, Master Solis said.
Valen assumed it was the noise of the crowd that seemed to add a tremor to his voice.
They deserve their end. Show them no mercy. Mark the tall one. He seems to know how to hold a blade.
Valen's eyes found the tallest of the three, a well-built man in his mid-30s, with close-cropped hair and a natural balance in his stance. Feet in line with his shoulders, sword held low.
Trained, he realized. A soldier. Soldier or healer. He's still a murderer.
The briefest pause.
Luck to you, brother.
Thank you, Master. He drew his sword, handed the scabbard to Master Solis, and strode forward into the arena. The crowd's shouts redoubled as he entered. Here and there he caught a word or two.
Sauna! Hawk killer! Kill him, boy!
He stopped 10 feet or so from the three men, looking at each of them in turn as the crowd's noise dwindled to a hush of anticipation. Two murderers and a rapist. They did not look like criminals. The one on the left was simply a scared, unshaven man, holding his sword in a shaking hand as rain pelted him, and 10,000 souls awaited his death. Rapist, Valen decided. The man on the right was stockier and less afraid, shifting his weight constantly from one foot to the other. His eyes locked onto Valen's beneath deeply glowering brows as he twirled his sword in his right hand, rainwater spraying from the blade. He said something, water spouting from his lips, a curse or a challenge, the words lost amidst the rain and the wind. Murderer. The third man, the soldier, showed no fear, and felt no need to twirl his sword or voice his aggression. He simply waited, his gaze unwavering. His stance the same sword-fighter stance Valen knew so well. A killer, certainly. But a murderer? The man on the right attacked first, as Valen expected he would, charging into an easily turned thrust. Valen used the momentum of the parry to bring the blade round in a slash at the man's neck. The stocky man was fast, though, dodging away with only his cheek laid open. The man on the left sought to take advantage of the distraction. Screaming as he ran in, pulling his sword back over his head and hacking down at Valen's shoulder. Valen turned, the blade missing by less than an inch, to thud into the sand. Valen's sword point took the unshaven man under the chin, forcing its way up through tongue and bone to find the brain. He withdrew the blade quickly and stepped away, knowing the soldier would attack now. His thrust was fast and well-placed, a killing stab at the chest. Valen's blade caught the tip and forced the sword point up, leaving an opening to the soldier's chest. Valen's counter was fast enough to have caught any of his brothers, but the tall man parried it without apparent difficulty. He moved back in a slight crouch, sword close to the ground, his eyes never leaving Valen. The stocky man was attempting to hold his slashed cheek together with one hand, his sword waving wildly as he staggered, spitting inaudible curses at Valen with bloodied lips. Valen fainted towards the tall man, slashing at his legs to force him back, then attacking the stocky man in a move so fast there could be no defense, rolling under a wild defensive slash to deliver a killing thrust through the back. His sword point pierced the stocky man's heart and emerged from his chest. Valen put his foot to the dying man's back and heaved him off his blade in time to duck under another slash from the tall man. He fancied he saw a raindrop sliced in half by the blade's passage. They drew back from each other, circling, swords leveled, eyes locked together. The stocky man took a few moments to die, struggling on the rain-sodden sand between them, spitting curses until his breath gave out, and he sagged, lifeless in the rain. Valen was suddenly struck by the same sense of wrongness that had assailed him before. In the forest, in the Fifth Order house when Sister Henna came to kill him, when he waited for Frentis to return from the test of the wild, there was something about his remaining opponent, something in the strength of his gaze and the set of his body, something in his being telling of a terrible, certain truth. This man is no criminal. This man is no murderer. How he knew he could not tell, but it was the strongest such feeling he had yet experienced, and he had no doubt of its certainty. He stopped, his sword point lowering as he straightened, the tensed, hard lines of his face softening. He could feel the rain for the first time, beating a chill into his skin. The tall man's brows knitted in puzzlement as Valen lost his fighting stance to stand, his sword held at his side, rain washing the blood from the blade. He raised his left hand, fingers open in a sign of peace. "Who are—" The tall man attacked in a blur, his sword as straight as an arrow, aimed directly at Valen's heart. It was a faster move than anything he had seen from Master Solis, and it should have killed him. But somehow he managed to turn in time for the sword point to pierce only his shirt, the edge of the blade marking his chest. The tall man's head was resting on Valen's shoulder, the hard determination gone from his eyes. His lips parted in a small gasp, his skin rapidly draining of color. "Who are you?" Valen asked him in a whisper. The tall man staggered back, Valen's sword making a sickening, ripping sound as it was dragged from his chest. He sank to his knees slowly, propping himself up with his own sword, resting his chin on the pommel. Valen saw that his lips were moving, and knelt beside him to hear the words. "My wife," the tall man said. It sounded like an explanation. His eyes met Valen's again, and for a moment there was something there. An apology? A regret? Valen caught him as he fell, feeling the life go out of him in a shudder. He held the dead soldier as the rain beat down, and the roar of the crowd crushed him with blood-crazed adulation. Valen had never been drunk before. He found it an unpleasant sensation, not unlike the dizzy feeling he got when taking a hefty blow to the head during practice, just more prolonged. The ale was bitter in his mouth, his first taste making him screw up his face in disgust.
"You'll get used to it," Barkus had assured him.
The tavern was near the western section of the city wall, and frequented mainly by off-duty guardsmen and local traders. For the most part, they seemed content to leave the five brothers alone, although there had been a few calls of congratulation to Valen.
"Best bet I ever made,"
a cheery-faced old man called, lifting his tankard in salute.
"Made a packet on you today, brother. Got odds of 10-1 when it looked like you'd get the chop."
"Shut up," Norta told the old man flatly. His left arm was cradled in a sling, the forearm heavily bandaged, but his visage held sufficient menace to make the old man blanch and sit down without further comment. They found a vacant table and Barkus bought the drinks. He was limping from a cut to the calf, and spilled a fair amount of the ale on the way back from the bar.
"Clumsy sod," Dentos grunted. "Let me get them next time."
He was the only one to have gotten through the test unscathed, although his gaze had a bright, frightened look, and he blinked rarely, as if scared of what he would see when he closed his eyes. Canis sipped his ale, frowning in puzzlement. From the way men lust after this so, I'd expect it to taste better. The line of his jaw was marked by a row of 8 stitches. The brother from the Fifth Order who tended the cut had assured him he would carry the scar for the rest of his life. "Well," Norta said, lifting his tankard.
"We're all here."
"Yeah." Dentos lifted his own mug, clacking it against Norta's.
"Here's to... being here, I suppose."
They drank, Valen forcing the ale down, draining his tankard.
"Easy, brother," Barkus warned him.
He felt them exchanging uneasy glances across the table, as he stared at the dregs at the bottom of the tankard. There had been an ugly scene with Master Solis back at the Circle, when Valen had demanded to know the identity of the tall man, and received only a curt response.
"A murderer."
"He was no murderer," Valen insisted, a mounting anger dispelling his normal deference. The tall man's face as he slipped into death was fresh in his mind.
Master, who was that man? Why was it necessary for me to kill him?
Every year the city guard provide us with a selection of condemned men, Solis replied, his patience nearing its end. We choose the strongest and most skilled. Who they are is not our concern. Neither is it yours, Sorna.
It is today.
Valin took a step closer to Solis, his fury mounting.
Valin,
Canis cautioned him, his hand on his arm.
I killed an innocent man today.
Valin spat at Solis, shaking off Canis's hand, advancing further.
For what? To show you I could kill?
You knew that already.
You chose him, didn't you?
Knowing he was the most skilled, knowing I'd be the one to face him.
A test is not a test if it's easy, brother.
Easy? A red mist was staining his vision. He found his hand had gone to his sword.
Valin!
Dentos and Norta stepped between them, Barkus pulling him back, and Canis keeping a firm grip on his sword hand.
Get him out of here!
Solis commanded as they hustled him towards the exit, near incoherent with rage.
Take the rest of the evening. Help your brother cool off.
Valin wasn't sure if ale was the best way to cool off. His anger hadn't dimmed at all. If anything, the way the room seemed to move around of its own volition was extremely aggravating. My Uncle Derv could drink more ale in a sitting than any man alive, Dentos said after his fourth tankard, his head lolling. They'd have a contest every summertide fair. Folk from miles around had come to challenge him. Not one of them could ever beat him. Grand ale drinking champion 5 years running. Would have been six if and he hadn't drunk himself to death in the winter. He paused to issue an extravagant burp.
Silly old sod.
Aren't we supposed to be enjoying this? Canis asked, both hands gripping the table as if scared he was about to tip over.
I'm happy enough, Barker said, grinning merrily.
His shirt was damp with ale, and he seemed oblivious to the rivulets that coursed down his chin every time he took a drink.
Two brothers, Norta was saying.
He had been rambling about his test for over an hour. From what Valin could gather, two of the men he had killed were brothers, both apparently condemned outlaws.
Twins, I think. Looked just the same. Even made the same sound when they died.
Valin's stomach gave an uncomfortable lurch, and he realized he was about to vomit.
Going outside, he mumbled, rising and making for the door on legs that seemed to have lost the ability to walk in a straight line.
The air outside chilled his lungs and made his nausea recede a little, but he was still obliged to spend a few minutes heaving into the gutter. Afterwards, he rested his back against the tavern wall and sank slowly onto the cobbles, his breath steaming in the frigid air.
My wife, the tall man had said.
Maybe he had been calling to her, or summoning a final memory as he struggled to take the image of her face with him into the beyond. A man with so many enemies shouldn't make himself so vulnerable. The man standing over him was of average height but well built, with a lean, deeply lined face and a piercing stare.
Erlin,
Valin said, releasing the hilt of his knife.
You don't look any different.
He gazed blearily around the empty street.
Did I pass out? Are you here?
I'm here.
Valin reached down to offer him a hand. And I think you've had enough for one night. Valin took the hand and levered himself to his feet with difficulty. To his surprise, he found he was at least half a foot taller than Erlin. When last they met, he had barely come up to his shoulder.
Thought you'd be a tall one, Erlin said.
Sella? Valin asked.
Sella's fine, last I saw her. I know she would want me to thank you for what you did for us.
I'll fight, but I won't murder. His boyhood resolve coming back to him. The promise he had made to himself after saving them in the wild. I'll kill men who face me in battle, but I won't take the sword to innocence. It felt so hollow now. So naive. He remembered his disgust at Brother Mackerel's tales of murdered deniers, and wondered if there was truly any difference between them now.
I've still got her scarf, he said,
trying to force his thoughts in a more comfortable direction.
Could you take it to her?
He fished clumsily inside his shirt for the scarf. I'm not sure I could find her if I chose to. Besides, I think she would want you to keep it. He took Valin's elbow and guided him away from the tavern.
Walk with me for a while, It should clear your head, and there's much I would like to tell you.
They walked through the empty streets of the Western Quarter, tracing a route through the rows of workshops that characterized this as the Craftsman's District. By the time they reached the river, Valen knew from the ache building at the back of his skull and the increased steadiness of his legs that he was starting to sober up. They paused on the towpath overlooking the river, gazing down at the moonlight playing on the currents churning the ink-black water.
"When I first came here," Aaron said, "the river stank so bad you couldn't go near it. All the waste of this city would flow into it before they built the sewers. Now it's so clean you can drink from it."
"I saw you," Valen said, "at the Summertide Fair 4 years ago. You were watching a puppet show."
"Yes, I had business there." It was clear from his tone he wasn't about to elaborate on what type of business.
"You risk much coming here. It's likely Brother Mackerel is still out hunting you somewhere. He's not a man to give up a hunt."
"True enough, he caught me last winter."
"Then how—"
"It's a very long tale. In short, he cornered me on a mountainside in Renfrew. We fought, I lost. He let me go."
"He let you go?"
"Yes. I was fairly surprised myself."
"Did he say why?"
"He didn't say much of anything at all. He left me tied up through the night whilst he sat by the fire and drank himself unconscious. After a while, I passed out from the beating he'd given me. When I woke in the morning, my bonds were untied and he was gone."
Valen remembered the tears shining in Mackerel's eyes. "Maybe he was a better man than I judged him to be."
"I saw you fight today," Erlin told him.
Valen felt the ache at the base of his skull deepen.
"You must be rich to have afforded a ticket."
"Hardly. There's a way into the circle few know of. A passage under the walls that affords a good view of the arena." Silence stretched between them. Valen had no wish to discuss his test, and was increasingly preoccupied with the suspicion that he was about to throw up again.
"You said you had something to tell me," he said, mainly in the hope that further conversation would distract him from the burgeoning nausea in his gut.
"One of the men you killed. He had a wife."
"I know, he told me."
He glanced at Erlin, noting the intense scrutiny in his eyes.
"You knew him?"
"Not well. My acquaintance was with his wife. She has assisted me in the past. I count her as a friend."
"She's a denier?"
"You would call her that. She calls herself Questa. And her husband was also part of this...
belief?"
"Oh, no. His name was Erlian Jural. Once he had been called Brother Erlian. He was like you, a brother of the Sixth Order, but he gave it up to be with Ilya, his wife. Little wonder he fought so well. I took him for a soldier. He took the trade of a boat builder after leaving the Order. Became highly regarded. Ran his own yard building barges. The finest on the river, some say."
Valen shook his head in sorrow. "I have served the faith by killing an innocent builder of boats."
"What was he doing in the arena?"
"I know he wasn't a murderer."
"It happened during the riots. Some locals got wind of Ilya's beliefs. Quite how, I don't know. Mayhap her son spoke of it when at play. Children can be so trusting. They came for her, 10 men with a rope. Erlian killed 2 and wounded 3 more. The rest ran off. But they came back with the city guard. Erlian was overpowered and taken to the Blackhold, his wife too."
"Their son?"
"He hid at his father's bidding as the fight raged. He's safe now, with friends of mine."
"If Erlian was defending his wife, then it wasn't murder. The magistrate would have seen that, surely."
"Surely. But the magistrate had some wealthy friends with an eye for an opportunity. Did you know the odds that you would survive your test were hardly worth a bet? The odds against were long indeed.